let's speak a minute to the Nebraska fandom, and they have shown out in full force this week, really, as we welcome in Brandon Vogel.
Whoa, what's the hat?
What's the hat? Yeah, what is the hat?
It's a Seattle World's Fair in like 1968 or something like that. Their minor league team wore it for like a year.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I like it. Vogues, we were just talking Husker baseball, and they made it happen last night against Michigan State. We're playing paper, rock, scissors as to who Will Bolt hands the ball to today. But I was going to jump into the Nebraska fan base for a moment because you've seen it in Omaha this week. You saw it with folks having the back of the Big Red against Maryland, and then for sure in an elimination game against Michigan State. Great crowd for Nebraska there. But it also translated to the phones and computer screens trying to infiltrate Boulder earlier this week. A little birdie told you anything? How many or what was the success rate for Big Red football fans for September 9th? Any insight?
Yeah, the only thing I have to go on is the little blue birdie. It seemed like on Twitter, most people that wanted tickets were able to get them. So, I mean, it's probably not going to be what we saw in, what was it, 2019 when Nebraska went out there, just because there's more Colorado fans interested in Colorado football at the moment, I believe. But, you know, Nebraska fans are going to find a way to get there. And for those people who maybe aren't able to get a ticket, like, it's one of those drivable games. A drivable game, right now, I understand, like, it's not next door if you're in Lincoln or Omaha. but that people have a history with, you know, from the Big 8 and the Big 12 days. So I think there's going to be plenty of red in Boulder. Of course, there was always going to be, despite whatever efforts Colorado wanted to make to prevent that.
I don't know how dialed in you are to their current roster situation, Brandon, but a little damage control being done by Dion. They released it on video. He's doing, he's talking with like some boosters, and he's like, hey, people need to stop lamenting what left and really think about what's coming. What's coming is even better. But we talked before, there might be 1,000 dudes in the transfer portal, but how many of those dudes are quality? And then how many of those dudes are coming to Colorado ready to compete this year? Do you know where they're at? Are they like if you're at 85 scholarships, are they at like 45? Are they at 70? Are they like, do you have any sense of that?
I don't know currently. And I they were in the 40s sort of at the start of May. You know, portal window is closed, like this is where it's at. And I haven't seen a whole lot of any additions they've made since then. But my impression is there's still a lot of work to do. And sure, you've got 85 scholarships to give out. You're going to give them out to somebody, but it's tough because like that Colorado team last year was really, really bad, like historically bad in a like 60 years of college football. These Power Five teams, like they don't fall this far. So I get it. Almost anything would be an upgrade at most spots, but you know, if you're leaning that hard on this second transfer window, I did like a really quick, and I'm going to go back to it at some point when I get more time in the summer, did like a really quick analysis of just like, here's what the first transfer portal was. And the blue chip percentage, so 4 and 5 star guys, was 20% or somewhere about there. In the second window, it was around 12 or 13%. So, I mean, it's just, you're getting, if you're having to rely on it at this point, it's not the same as like kind of the great December, January reshuffling that we saw this year. So it's really interesting. Like they'll get enough guys to fill out an 85 man scholarship roster. But then like how much time are you spending doing all of that? Whereas Nebraska, you know, had a transfer portal addition. I think because it was a good fit, it was a right fit. I think the staff was happy to stand pat if they did, but they found a player they liked. But I was just editing a long Q&A with Matt Rhule that's going to be in our yearbook. And, you know, he's talking about like all of the stuff they were doing in the spring and all the stuff they have to do in the summer, focus on competition and building a tough team, et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, he's not trying to fill out a roster right now. So what's that look like? Once you get all the guys you need, how do you even spend enough time getting ready for the season and trying to instill some of these things? And I'm not saying they're not happening. I'm just saying, I don't know.
Brandon Vogel's with us from HailVarsity.com and magazine managing editor, weekend edition, Mark Kranak of Hail Varsity. And you can absolutely get that yearbook. The deadline is May 31st. The yearbook is your go-to for the Nebraska football preview, the 2023 edition. And can subscribe, HailVarsity.com/offer. Get the digital. Vogues, to focus in on the yearbook with just the team that you've been a part of and been in charge of for a number of years, bud, between what Erin Sorensen's able to do as she looks at the offensive line. Her and Brady sat down with Coach Rule, as you alluded to. Really had fun talking with Jacob yesterday, Padilla, about his feature with looking at how Nebraska's flipped positions for a number. Drake Keeler and his sit down with Gabe Irvin. And, of course, Brady Altman's dives into that Texas pipeline. I want to go back to Erin and Brady's chat with Rule and a little nugget on the Hail Varsity Twitter. On Hail Varsity Twitter was dropped. And as you look at Rule, what do you think his biggest challenge is this season? I mean, is it confidence? Is it depth? Is it two new offenses? Is it kind of cohesion? Is it something as simple as belief? I mean, what do you think he's got to tackle? And he's going to do it step by step by step. I mean, he's got a plan, and this is volume three of that plan at another spot.
Yeah. I mean, I do think there are some real, like, logistical challenges, the sort of stuff any new coach faces at any new program. Like, do you have the guys that you want? Do you have enough of the guys that you want from just like a talent? Like, we have some new ideas, some, you know, we may ask our middle linebacker to do something different than the existing middle linebackers are used to doing. Like, how do you tackle that? But I really think the biggest challenge, and Rule talks a lot about this in that Q&A, is getting the players to not just understand, but believe that everything that happened prior to this doesn't matter. Like, and to be honest, like, I think that, well, it is, he says that in that Q&A, that his mantra is really what's next. And he specifically says that's with an exclamation point, not a question mark. And you think back to Nebraska and the bizarre run of one score losses, all that stuff. You don't even want to bring it up at this point, but I get that. But it seemed like that stuff lingered. So can you truly get to a point where it's like, hey guys, we're going to be, that Colorado game might be tight going into the fourth quarter. Minnesota game probably going to be tight going into the fourth quarter, just with the way Minnesota typically plays. Can you forget all of the times this hasn't worked out before? And I think that is probably maybe the biggest hurdle, that if you clear it, and we won't know until November if Nebraska fully cleared it, they kind of cleared it. I think that's probably the biggest one in my mind.
Brendan, how have you seen and sorry, Mark, here, I need to ask, how have you seen Matt Rule and his staff try to kill that old mentality, that mentality of being unsure of yourself, not being confident in your abilities? Because that seems a little bit harsh to say. Whenever you look back at the last couple of years, there always seems to be that self-doubt that creeps in. Have you seen Matt Rule and his staff take steps to try and curb that? Or is this an everyday process? What have you seen from that?
Well, I don't know that I've seen it myself firsthand, because, you know, I'm not there. But what I think you have to do is, I think you have to model it, and you have to kind of be that guy from the first meeting you have with the team. And it, you know, I think you, as you go through and you start practices and you start workouts and all that stuff, and they're getting ready to start summer workouts here again next week, like you have a bad practice, maybe things aren't, guys are missing assignments, that sort of stuff. I think your reaction to those things is where you have the chance to say, like, hey, I'm not just telling you, I'm not just putting a mantra on the wall, you know, all respect to Ted Lasso, this, you know, you can put believe on the wall. But if you don't act that way and you don't truly believe, it's just a sign on the wall, right? So I think it's that. It's saying like, hey guys, like we had bad practice yesterday, whatever. We had a good practice yesterday. The next day, it's the same. Like what happened has happened. We can't change any of that at this point. And it seems simple. Like this all seems like, you know, motivational speaker stuff, but I really do think coaching at this level, which is the second highest level of football you can play in the world, behind the NFL, it's still really about that.
Brandon Vogel with us on the Hail Varsity Something on the weekends edition, radio, audio, podcast, live.
There you go. Hail Varsity on the weekends. Is that better for you?
It's a little better. We're still naming it. We're going to have a brainstorm. We're going to have a brand exploration.
14 years later, we're still naming it. Okay.
Yeah. just perusing Colorado's roster. One, it's a mess. Like, just how they structure it. Some people are DL. Other people are defensive line. Some people are cornerback. Some people are DB. Like, get your stuff together over there. One guy's center, but he's not considered OL. Whatever. You can tell they're throwing that thing together. Four human beings listed as defensive line, though. That's it. And listen to their sizes. 6'3", 250, grad student. 6'3", 275, grad student. 6'4", 255, grad student. They have one dude above 300 pounds on the defensive line. They only have four. And then they have an edge, a single edge. So five people, conceivably, that you can put on the defensive line as we sit here and talk today. And a couple of them transfers. Now, they are older, you know, having some grad students. That's obviously working in their favor. But it's like you – and they have like 11 receivers. You look at that alone, just like your game plan against them is really simple, right? Like it's – we are just running right at you, period, until you can stop it, and that's it. Like, isn't that probably what's going to happen to Deion this year? Is that, I mean, that's what you do. You just run it right at him because the likelihood of them being able to withstand that is extremely low.
Yeah, the Colorado-Utah game this year might have to be at 2 a.m. because it's not suitable for most viewers the way that could go. And, you know, when you think about it from like, a Nebraska kind of matchup scenario, getting to go play Minnesota to start, whatever happens in that game, probably not the worst thing for what Nebraska is going to see the next week and what we know that, at least offensively, Nebraska hopes to do, which is play pretty Minnesota-y, I think, is a big piece of it. So that's the big thing with this Colorado, you know, this Colorado gamut. And it's fascinating. Like, we don't know if it's going to work. Maybe it does. But I think the big question that, like, football people have with it is, yeah, you're gonna, you know, you can go out and get the top two receivers from USF last year, which Colorado did. You're always going to be able to get receivers, and you know, Deion had his quarterback ready to go. You'll find some guys. They got a running back from Kentucky who's experienced. I think he was there for four seasons.
A running back. The other ones are tailbacks.
Yeah,
sorry.
Of course.
Speaking back to the quality of their roster, but go ahead. Sorry.
I'm gonna find out who is in charge of updating the roster at Colorado. I'm just because it's probably like a grad assistant or maybe even a student who works in the sports information department.
Dude, I think it's whoever has a spare minute. Like, it's I don't think it's one person. Yeah.
I'm gonna send that person a note and just be like, I appreciate what you're doing here. But it's the question is like, can you do it on the line? And if you've only got five defensive linemen and anybody else who needs defensive linemen is out there like probably reaching a little bit at this point with guys that are still in the portal. And I would guess that's probably the case on the O-line too.
So Brandon, Mark led off this question by saying the game plan against Colorado with that defensive line is going to be run the ball at them until they prove they can stop it. But wouldn't you say that's most likely going to be the game plan based on what we've heard from Matt Rhule and Satterfield all year long? That even if it's Michigan across them, then they want that mentality of we're going to run the ball at you until you prove you can stop it.
Yeah, I think they hope to. I hope to be there. I think they have the running back room and the running back depth to really do that. And we know that Rhule has maintained his positivity around the offensive line. It's just for those of us that watched the offensive line the past 2 years, it's tough to write that in pen. So that'll be the thing. Like they'll try to go that route. Like I think, you know, if you want a barometer for how this Nebraska season is going offensively, it's probably like time of possession might be a good one to look at. I have problems with that stat sometimes, but like, I think controlling games that way, if things are going well, Nebraska is going to be a team that has the ball the majority of the time.
Brandon Vogel's with us, weekend edition. It's Hail Varsity. Get the yearbook by May 31st if you want it included in your Hail Varsity magazine subscription, hailvarsity.com/offer. Get the digital as well. Bundle it. Vogues, how big of an advantage is it for Minnesota to have seen Syracuse in the bowl game? Tony White's 3-3-5. They see Tony White's they see Tony White for real this time to open the season. I know they've got to go through all sorts of Syracuse film, but they saw it up close and personal. It held him to 78 yards on 22 carries. And oh, by the way, had 13 tackles for loss.
Yeah, well, I think our experience as professional observers of Nebraska football is if you just change up your defensive front from whatever is expected to something that's not, you automatically win, right? Saw that.
Sure.
Yeah. Three-man front. Oh, it was a four-man front. Sorry. Yeah, you're sunk. No. I think the Syracuse piece of it's pretty real. Like if you're Minnesota and it's all happened in the past, like, of course you want to go to the college football playoff if you could, but if you're like, well, the bowl game's done, what's the best possible bowl game we could have played to get ready for our season opener in the next year? It's probably Syracuse against Nebraska's new defensive coordinator who was there then. So they'll have probably as good a beat on what Nebraska should be like. You know, you obviously don't know how they change things and how they use their personnel, which in this defense can be a pretty big thing, but it's a slight advantage for Minnesota. Minnesota loses quite a bit of production on both sides of the ball. Obviously new quarterback, they're pretty good at wide receiver. But got to replace Mo Ibrahim as well. And defensively, there's a good amount to replace too. So this is a Minnesota team that I don't know kind of where they're going. I mean, they're going to be good. Like, I think PJ Fleck has definitely earned the benefit of the doubt there for me. But are we talking 9-win good? Or are we talking 7-5 and really annoying in every game that you play?
They're a tough out. Basically, yeah. Right? Like they've at least established that, you know, they're going to foul off pitches and they're going to, you know, yeah. not easy to get out. By the way, little trivia. Did you guys know Pearl Jam is playing in Minneapolis that Saturday?
You've mentioned it to me about changing my Friday flight.
So Huskers, Minnesota, Thursday. I already checked. No Twins game Friday. That would have been the ridiculous trifecta. But, Saturday, Pearl Jam is playing there. So there's that whole thing as well.
Bogues, have you seen Pearl Jam?
No, I haven't actually.
Me either.
Just, I mean, they, you know, given my age and when they came up and when they were most popular, like they were definitely out there. I remember buying their live albums when they put out like an entire tour's worth of live albums. And you could
get,
but never seen them in person. I mean, that's, boy, I tell you what, it's shaping up to be a pretty good opening last week of August if you're a Husker fan. Like, if you're going to do the, well, I got to be there for volleyball, and then next day we're in Minnesota for an opener, and then find something to do Friday. I'm sure there's something there. We'll poke around in the area, and then if you got Pearl Jam on Saturday, man, you're kicking off Labor Day weekend, right?
It's not bad.
You can spend $1,000 like that. Pearl Jam tickets, Nebraska, Minnesota tickets, Husker volleyball tickets, like follow it up next week with a trip out to Colorado. We're talking $1,500. Like you can blow up your money like that at the start of football season. Tell you what.
That's why we're talking about it now. We got a budget. I know
we don't. Shout out to the pharmacist Jeff when Pearl Jam was at PBA. My buddy Jeff in high school, he would join fan groups, right? So Dave Matthews, Pearl Jam, he would get in their mailing list. Yeah. And even as a teenager, it paid off as crusty old 40-year-olds for us, because he got us, and this is how long ago Pearl Jam was in Lincoln. It was 2014. Yeah. I think maybe. Anyhow, he got us floor seats.
Yeah.
So it was great. Quick quiz around the room. Elijah, you may or may not want to participate in this, but what Pearl Jam song would you want to see live? Ooh. What is the song?
Oh man, there's quite a few. Even Flow, I think, is just
basic answer. Yeah.
That's a it's a obvious classic one. What's the one that's a little bit slower?
I was gonna say Jeremy.
The one that's a little bit slower, Release. Is it Release Me? That one, he hit some octaves that are pretty killer. Okay. It's one of those bands that, like, you probably know all the words, even mm-hmm. if you don't have them downloaded and on your playlist, because you just kind of hear them just by living in America. You know, kind of like every time you go to Walgreens, Sheryl Crow's on, like, it's, you know, you just, they're just there. They're just part of the soundtrack of life. Yeah, when was the last time you went to Walgreens and you didn't hear Soak Up the Sun? I mean, it just, it's, you know.
It's on repeat.
It's always there. Yeah. Pearl Jam's similar. Like, you probably know all the lyrics to, like, 30 Pearl Jam songs without having actually studied it.
Well, and that's why, you know, Chris has put us in a tough spot here, because the answer, the correct answer, what song do you want to hear live, is going to be Even Flow. But I don't want to say that, because everyone's going to be like, oh, this guy, he's like not a real Pearl Jam fan. He's going to say Even Flow, of course. But like at the end of the day, whenever I'm at that Pearl Jam concert, I'll enjoy other songs. But when Even Flow comes on, I'm going to enjoy it. Also, Schmitty, I can't believe you pulled the age card on me and said, oh, Elijah doesn't have to answer this one.
So, No. I pulled the age card. Age. You are a connoisseur of many, many things. And I know you know a little Pearl Jam, but I didn't know how much you liked Pearl Jam.
I mean, I wasn't alive during the time, but I still appreciate Pearl Jam.
That's thank you. My
Pearl Jam's like Zeppelin to him for us.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah, that's fine. That's
actually, yeah.
Vogues,
Nirvana's more like Zeppelin, honestly.
Okay. Good call. Do you fancy Pearl Jam, Vogues, and are you going with the? Yeah. Are you going with? Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Are you going with a song that you would pick?
I was never the biggest Pearl Jam fan. Not that I disliked them. I was just kind of like, yeah, they're around. There's a couple songs I like. But the song I always liked the most from them, which was kind of a live staple, was Yellow Ledbetter.
Nice.
So yeah, that would be really the one I would go in. Like, I want to see that. But I think Elijah might be on the right track. I think live Jeremy is probably its own experience. And I am... we'll play the age card on Elijah again. I don't know if this is the case for you, Chris and Mark, but like I saw Jeremy, the video on MTV so much as a youth that I'm just like, it's a great song, obviously an important song. And I like it. But there are just songs in my life at this point where I'm like, I like it, but you know what? I don't need to hear that anymore. Like, it's not that I'm going to avoid it. I'm just like,
I know what you're saying, man.
I've got all my Jeremy.
So that's how I feel. That's how I feel about like Dave Matthews Band. Like, appreciate them, respect them, don't feel the need to download any of their stuff, because it's just like, and I know Chris is just staring into my soul, like, what the hell's the matter with you? He's amazing live.
No, that's the whole difference. Like, I don't have that much on my playlist of that's not live. Like, if I had to do over again, I would have found a way to Radio City Music Hall to see him live acoustically. And as much as I've seen him, the best I've ever had of, his performance was when he did 45 minutes in Blue Springs, Missouri, as his own opening act with him and just a guitar, just doing acoustic. That's was incredible. That was incredible. He's been awesome. It's been fun. But yeah, the acoustic part has always been burned, and I hope I get that a second time. I don't think I will. I'm going to either go Better Man or Black. And I know those are obviously super trendy takes, but I
well, that's got the thing with them is they have like 30 of those.
I know, but Better Man, like Better Man, when he did it at Madison Square Garden, Eddie and Pearl Jam, it was awesome. I mean, I still watch that YouTube clip of the concert. I'm playing music on my speakers here because it was so cool. And it would get turned into a sing-along, clearly, the first 5 minutes of the song.
Okay, outside of
back
the
to football.
Real quick, sorry. Outside of the titans of industry, like your Dave Matthews, like your Pearl Jams, best bands you've seen live that are somewhat surprising? Just real quick.
Big Head Todd and the Monsters.
Okay. Brandon?
That was at the Rococo 20 years ago.
When I was living in Boston in the early 2000s, I saw My Morning Jacket, a band that I really like and still like, and like a super small like basement of a Middle Eastern restaurant venue that was like blew my socks off. That's probably one of the best shows I've ever seen.
Yeah, Jim James, man, that stuff's really good, really good. And they played Pinewood, and a couple people that I saw that talked to that went there were just like, dude, they were unbelievable in that setting. So this is kind of weird, but Tesla, I saw Tesla at, it was like Z Fest or something, you know, like Z92, whatever. And it was like hair bands. Tesla was album perfect, man. They were, yeah, I mean, you would have thought they were lip singing, but they weren't, because you heard the peas popping and stuff, like fantastic.
I for a second so there, I thought we were talking about the car brand. I didn't realize Tesla was a band.
Wow,
Gary Sharp.
Yeah. Wow. What's going on?
Okay, Sharpie, let me catch you up. We were talking Minnesota weekend, okay, where Husker fans are going to go volleyball, invade Minneapolis, figure out something to do Friday. Cranach's trying to talk us into going to Pearl Jam Saturday. Stay in the extra
Saturday day in Minneapolis.
And we got into what song of Pearl Jam would you want to see live, and then got into band. We have talked a hell of a lot of football and baseball, I promise you. But
it's that time of year.
But we gotta get your thought here on like, okay, what sneaky good band that you've seen live and also
outside of the Titans. Like, you can't say like U2, Dave Matthews, Pearl Jam, like those guys are off the table. Has to be relatively obscure.
Gosh, I'm trying to go back. I will say Creed.
Creed? Huh.
Yeah. I saw them at Stir Cove probably 10 years ago.
They probably did.
And that's when they were. Yeah, and they were still together and they were normal. And yeah, they didn't have any issues by then.